Let's get into it, Kennedy. So
let's get into it.
Right now, you and I are making a soon-to-be piece of lost media. Welcome back to Monday Night Fake Fights, where I, Garrick Taylor, she and they, am doing a rewatch of the Monday Night Wars and making it your problem. This week's returning esteemed guest is...
Esteemed?
Everyone's esteemed. I hate to break it to you. I've ruined that word, but you're esteemed. What's your name, esteemed?
I thought I was grilled.
Grill?
As opposed to esteemed.
Freshly grilled Kennedy Cooper. Yay. steamed hams, steamed guests. There you
that's
go.
Right. That's right. Yeah, I'm mostly glad to be back. Although I have to say, how do you do this? How do you survive this? Because it felt kind of like I was huffing solvents after 2 hours of watching wrestling from the 90s. I'm not going to lie. It was better and worse than last time I came on the show.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I will say there, to answer your question, there's a reason that I generally refer to the constituents of people who listen to this show. There's more of you now. Hi, welcome. As sickos, because we're fucking sickos. I have in my notes, sickos. Like, that's how it's because I was going to do this anyway without a podcast, and then I don't know, because I'm twisted and I need to know because I need to take all of this in, even if it sucks. I need to it while it exists, even more so, because like right now, let's get into it, Kennedy. So
let's get into it.
Take a knee. Right now, you and I are making a soon to be piece of lost media. So in that vein, while all this shit exists, I need to put it in my brain hole. That's why at this point, the solvent feeling, that's the lubrication.
I can but yes, respect you... this, but wow.
So
wow,
yeah, no, wow. Thank you. Thank you. I do what I can, curtsy. You know, it's a labor of love, but also patreon.com/mnffpod if you want to make it a labor of money. That's cool.
patreon.com/the Twin Towers Must Fall. Quote, Macho Man Randy Savage, unquote.
Fuck, rise to the top. Yeah, exactly. He fucking called it. He knew. So I mean, you bring up the Macho Man, our biggest of boys. Thank you for coming back after last time with Raw's Battle Royal, and you got to see what that was like. So it's a nice thing of you to come back. Besides the fact that you're a friend and coworker and part of the network.
yeah, all that or whatever the fuck.
Easy grab, kids.
Here's the thing. Don't forget to listen to Worst Week Yet, by the way, while we're just sloshing it. We're no worse than the hosts of these wrestling shows.
Oh no, it's worse. It gets so much worse.
I will say this. I could see at least a little bit more the quality levels equalizing, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. It's good.
Because Raw is eventually going to surpass Nitro. Now Nitro was still better than Raw this week.
All right, well, we're getting right into that. You're like skipping to the end there. Fantastic.
I'll have a lot more to say when we get to the end. Don't worry.
I absolutely agree. At this point, it's barely a fight.
Right now, this isn't much of a spoiler because I'm sure every week right now,
It's like a baby boxing Mike Tyson or a Paul brother boxing Mike Tyson. You know, it's just not fair. It's ridiculous to even. So yes, you are correct. Every week, Nitro is better than Raw right now.
Yeah. So I'll say more about it. I'll have a lot more to say about why.
Would you like to start with
spoilers?
Raw?
that probably won't shock virtually anyone. But compared to last time, and again, I'll give my full review as we go and at the end and everything, but compared to last time, the quality was closer.
I will give you that.
And that was intriguing because, last time I was like, how the fuck did Raw become more popular? Like, it was baffling to me last time because Nitro was infinitely more entertaining. This time, it's a little bit of a mixed bag both on both sides. Which one did you want to start with?
I was going to say, I think we should start with Raw just because Nitro, it turns out, had a bombshell waiting for us. So we'll save some of that fun stuff.
Nitro had a couple of bombshells, and I'll be interested to know which one was actually historic because, of course, I don't know shit.
Yes, I mentioned that. The spoiler, there was a historic Nitro this week, and I let Kennedy know that, oh, shit, that happened.
And I was I wonder what was historic, because there were several things that could have been historic.
But
I don't know enough about wrestling to know.
Let's go ahead and start with Raw, because while it was better than the absolute shit show that you were here for last time.
It was still fucking bad.
Absolutely. So I found the Raw section of my notes because we skipped ahead because I'm a professional. I should put this in as a disclaimer. I did watch the shitty, awful Netflix Mr. McMahon doc last week, so I am ready to be pissed off. Kennedy, I'm going into this prime. The shit stain gives us a voiceover recap of In Your House 5, and he asks why Diesel and Undertaker aren't sharing in the Christmas spirit. I have a two-part answer for Vince. A, they're the two tallest guys that you have, and you have no other ideas. And B, one of the local sound guys told him what a Teamster is, and they're just not feeling the spirit this year, Vince. It's not happening. We could have what? Healthcare? What the fuck are you talking about?
I don't know, the vibes are off right away.
Right off the bat. And they are live from Delaware. I don't know what are the vibes in Delaware. I've never been to Delaware. I feel like it's weird vibes only.
Yeah.
I feel
like they have their own special. It's definitely weird vibes only.
I mean, they gave us Biden, right? So like it's just a bunch of Bidens in the crowd, and that's terrifying to me.
first match of the night is fucking Jeff Jarrett.
Yes, sweet baby faced little baby Double J.
Double J. Oh. This character is not working for me.
It is literally Kennedy in my notes, one of the most annoying gimmicks in the history of wrestling is this particular Double J.
I don't get it, because the character could work, and they really blow it with this battle in particular, because they kind of play it up like there's like a little bit of a music rivalry aspect to the battle, but then do nothing with it, you know, like, ooh, country versus hip-hop. They kind of like give that little taste, and then that there's nothing.
That's a way of saying what I think I put in my notes, where Fatu's music hits and Vince lets out a "everybody get up, yo." And I was like, oh wow, okay, Vince did a thing.
And like, all speaking right. of poorly developed characters, Fatu, yeah, wow, what a, you know, and this is one of the issues, that Raw is having in this episode, and I think a little bit in this era in general, but definitely it's very noticeable in this episode, is that the jobbers are too obvious and the telegraphing is ridiculous.
Yep, pretty much. Like, and it's funny because a week before this, Fatu was eating the jobbers, and now Fatu's coming out to try to get Double J over, and it's like, okay. I will say to this, I am bloodline for life. Shouting out his mom is a big reason why. He is so wholesome, and fuck Vince McMahon, his kids are still in the company. So, like, do what you will.
Yeah.
Uso.
Yeah, I get you.
He won. They won. He, like, his whole family is, like, near the top of that, and Vince doesn't get to make money off of him anymore. And to that I say, yes, Fatu, make a difference. Yeah, but that's like our earliest, I think in our earliest there were signs in a while. Fatu does the Double J strut, and Vince says he has more rhythm than Double J, and I would say likely sings better than him too, I would guess. And I'm just like, what do you mean there, bud? Like, what are you trying to... Okay, moving on. Like, no, all right, this already gonna be like that. God damn it.
He says something in this episode about Michael Jackson, right?
Yes, yeah, something about... Oh, no, King gets on.
Oh, no, it's so King. It's King. This, yeah, oh, King's like, yeah, he needs to go spend some time with Michael Jackson, at European in, Disney World. Like,
Yeah, Disney Europe. What? Whatever the... I was so little that I don't know what Michael was up to at this time. I'm sure nothing good, but he had to go there, and as is tradition, they spend most of the match talking about Shawn Michaels, but King gets that shit in. He says he's telling Double J to send Fatu back to the slum he came from, and that Santa Claus wouldn't go to his neighborhood after dark.
Yeah, there's definitely some...
Gerald, he's...
Big race.
Some shit going on. It's like, Gerald, he's from San Diego. What do you think is going on here? Like, I don't understand. Okay. So thankfully, Double J does try to get it home quickly with the figure four, and then Ahmed Johnson comes out and just starts fucking...
Well, quickly, quote-unquote, all these matches drag a bit.
Yeah, quickly, quote unquote, this one dragged. And it's two guys that I like, especially their later work from, but this was just like, do a thing. And honestly, the King really pulled it out of me. You ask how I do this. A couple episodes ago, I had to like turn it off and come back to it.
However, the theatrics of Ahmed Johnson breaking up the match...
That all was great, and Delaware fucking loves Ahmed Johnson. Like, it was so fucking great. And Patreon people will know, Double J came in and fucked with his match the night before. So this is why it makes sense for him to just run out and say, fuck you. And, you know, that's nice. In the meantime, it's always good to see Fatu. Rikishi's wonderful. But that's a thing that's going to go somewhere. That's like the starting... This is a lot of starting of arcs episode, I feel like. But that makes sense. We get the Royal Rumble promo, which I'm pretty jazzed about. You were here for a battle royal. This is not necessarily that. Rumble's one of the things that they did that... Like, they actually made up that hasn't turned to rusty old shit. I'm super happy for that. But yeah, then there's blah, blah, Doc, blah, blah, Gorilla Monsoon, blah.
Little taste of Gold Dust. Fun little promo from Gold Dust.
They decide, let's get real fucking gay with it with all that out of the way.
This episode's real gay. It's blatantly gay, too. It's not subtext. It's just text.
No, it is text at this point. He wants to ooze machismo with Razor.
Yeah, yeah.
And somewhere Scott Hall just losing his mind in the back somewhere.
Undertaker makes a little appearance, which, you know, you do have to give WWE this. Undertaker, what an iconic character. We're just really seeing the birth of him here to some extent, but he's already fucking cool. Even before they give him all the bells and whistles he'll have later. So,
well, this is like the end of his first arc of his first arc of he was amazing, because he was actually starting to kind of lose his bells and whistles here, but he's making a comeback for it. But all they can give him is Diesel at this point. The mask is really nice. They're up in the bells and whistles.
But I feel like, you know, two years from now, like 1997, Undertaker will be...
Oh yeah, he's a huge part of everything.
Huge fucking deal that everybody wants the Undertaker action figure by 1997. But right now, they're not sure if they want it yet. But I think people are probably starting to feel it. And this, I like how he's just like maintaining this just like extraordinary intensity. You know, like
he keeps it up for like 30 years. Yeah, like, just like never
whenever these motherfuckers are talking to him, you can even tell occasionally that like he's struggling to keep that face, but he keeps it. Like,
oh yeah, it gets even better later when they start trying to get him pop. But my favorite part of that whole promo is Diesel calling Paul Bearer Gomez. That's the only notable thing I have of the whole segment. But as if one Ric Flair on the week wasn't enough, though, we get the Nature Boy, Buddy Landell.
Buddy Landell fucking sucks a dick.
He is so bad.
This guy sucks at wrestling. He's got a beer belly. He doesn't even look cool. Like,
he sucks at doing Ric Flair's shit.
His outfit,
and he's like,
his
not
dad
even
just looks everything like he's about in a big black diaper. Now here's the thing.
He fucked
you
up.
Can have a gut and wrestle, but don't wear fucking big black diaper if that's your you know, like you want to wear fucking a spandex top at that point. It sucks it in a little. Like
even
like,
a onesie.
This guy looks
unitard.
Like he's not putting it. It's okay. It's not just his gut. It's his arms too. Look wimpy. He doesn't look like he's hitting the gym. He looks like he's fucking pretending.
Because Arn Anderson's got a little bit of a beer gut. Like Arn Anderson's got like, but that's the right.
Yeah. Way. Like I don't care in particular that he has the gut, but it's the overall thing of like, his gut looks flabby, his thighs look flabby, his arms look skinny. He does not look like he's hitting the gym at all.
he looks like they pulled him out of the indies because it almost looks like they pulled him out of nowhere because they wanted to try to make fun of Ric Flair by having the other Nature Boy. Like, see, he's not original. It's like, okay. The problem with that, though, is you got the Kirkland model. He fucked up a Flair flop twice. Like, how do you fuck up falling on your face? Like,
and it just really feels like they just, if they really wanted this bit to work, it's like, okay, before you actually introduce him to the circuit, put him in the gym with a trainer and, you know, get him practicing some fresh modern moves with like some pro wrestling trainers, and like, you know, do
Which
that
kinda...
for 3 months or so, and like, it just doesn't feel like, you know, they put in that kind of effort to like sort of build him up before making this big appearance, and then they're like, oh, look at this guy, he's so awesome. Meanwhile, the guy he's fighting, like, it's just so obvious that if it was a real street fight, this guy would be beating Buddy Landell's fucking ass into the ground. And it's just like, you know, Everybody knows wrestling is fake. But a lot of times when people say wrestling is fake, what they really mean is the wrestling I'm currently looking at looks like shit. Like, like some wrestling looks good. Some looks cool. Fucking, you know, maybe it's because he really killed a guy, but Marty Jannetty really seems like he's going to beat a guy's ass in the ring. You know?
I forgot Kennedy is a hardcore Jannetty stan.
I don't know much about wrestling, but I am a Jannetty stan.
you said on the pay-per-view that you would let him in your house for upwards of 30 minutes.
No, I said supervise 10 minutes in the living room.
Okay, yeah, supervise 10 minutes in the living room. That's what it was. Which I think's fair. But yeah, no, Buddy Landell's also a veteran at this point, and it's like, it shows. The fact that they refer to Bob Shake and Bake Holly from Talladega as a fiery youngster made me want to, like, melt my brain. Because he was born an angry old man, goddamn. That's hardcore Holly. He is a curmudgeon.
And again, but just so much telegraphing.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, though, he gave him his goddamn, he gave him a fucking Frankensteiner.
There were some moves in this fight that were worth watching.
And they were all coming from
Sparkplug. Yeah, they were all coming from the fucking, the guy who's fated to lose.
Yeah.
And the match is really long. Again, these matches are really long this time in this particular episode of Raw.
And really
none of them really feel like they were long for a good reason. They just seem to be
exactly
long.
They're just kind of holding space for such winning commentary as the sentence clearing up some of the controversy from last night's in regard to Santa Claus, which is a thing that was said. How was this winning ratings? So long story short,
there's just nothing going on here.
And like, after getting up from a fucking Hurricane Rana from Bob Holly, I quit this Raw because he beats him with a standing elbow drop. Not even from the top rope. He bounced off the rope a little and did a little spinny spin and hit him with an elbow drop and beat him with that. And I'm just, I'm out. Like, I'm officially clocked out of this one, folks.
But guess what? There's an even more annoying fight about to happen.
Right. Well, not even a fight. At first, we have to deal with the most annoying Brother Love and Ted DiBiase to tell us about Santa Claus and if he was actually Santa Claus or... Checks notes, balls Mahoney. It was a fact, balls. Ballsy Claws. Brother Million Dollar Man loves us, apparently, which feels like propaganda. I guess, like, I don't know. You were there, I believe, for Balls Claws. They didn't give him a name. It was just Santa Claus, dude. Apparently he has a name of Santa
Claus. Santa Claus.
Yeah. From the South Pole. Also seems racist. He goes around stealing presents. Is Balls Mahoney gonna wrestle as Santa Claus? Is this what's happening? I don't know. I mean, the solvents, you mentioned the solvents. I'm starting to feel the solvent.
And then right as the solvents are just melting through your cerebral cortex.
Right as I'm peeking.
Luna comes out and he looks like he does not want to be there at all. Like, wow, way to make this guy, like whatever fucking motivating pep talk they gave this guy was ass. Because he comes out there with the face like, yeah, I'm here to lose and fuck you guys. Like, yeah. It's written on his fucking face. Like, you would not believe.
The pep talk that Vince gave him is the same he gives everyone. Get out there and make me money. And he says, fuck this shit.
I don't blame him. The whole Yokozuna thing is unbelievably messed up.
It's reaching its end at this point. It's truly
such a shitty gimmick.
That man held world championship gold at one point.
Yeah, and I mean, like, he's like a real wrestler.
He's fucking solid. And I mean, for a dude his size can do super kicks like that, like, goddamn. Like, he was a hell of an athlete. He doesn't care, and they didn't know what to do with him after a certain point. He gets followed out by Goldust and a bellhop-looking Usher guy, which is
hilarious.
Sweet. Just great.
Goldust is awesome, and I'll get into... So Goldust does several things to kind of fuck with Razor Ramon at the start of this match.
Yeah, really, we'll I just think that...
More... There's a lot more to say at the end of this match overall. However, there is one thing that the commentators say around the start of this match, which is... I'm going to get this slightly wrong, but they said Goldust has made his feelings the most overt of any wrestler in the WWE, which is a really interesting way to put that, isn't it? Isn't that like a really interesting, like, they're not like, oh, Goldust, the first gay man in the WWE. They're just like, whoa, Goldust, real overt with it.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah, but at the same time, this is... Kennedy, this is how I always want to be like, sweet summer child. Because I'm sitting here going, we're lucky he's like, he wants to suck dick. Like Vince could have been like, this guy loves cock. Like, that's what he wanted to do inside, you know? And it's like, at least he goes with bizarre. I do think that
that wording is so interesting because it's just like the implication is that this is not Goldust is not the first or last gay guy in gay character in the WWE, however you want to look at it. He's the overt one. And that was like the implication of what the announcer said. I was like, wait, what the fuck? The announcer said. Basically, well, there's gay shit in the WWE, but it's not usually out in front like this. Like, just a funny fucking thing to say.
It's also bullshit, though. It's also total bullshit, because Adrian Adonis fucking absolutely said in, like, interviews that he was gay.
Right,
he was
it's just so funny that it's just like, I don't know, there's something interesting about it, because there is a lot of homophobia in all of this. Like, it's very queer baiting in a fucked up way. Like, this type of queer baiting specifically can get people hurt, you know? Like, like
it's gonna get worse before it gets better.
So there is that aspect, but also like there's this weirdly, like the 90s had this weirdly tolerant attitude in certain ways also, though, where like the whole episode they're all kind of being like, well, it's pretty weird to me, but live and let live. And like that's like a little different than what you would get now, where it would be more like, oh, get that gross shit out of here or something, you know, like.
Yeah, basically, like in a lot of ways, it did in fact used to be better, I guess.
It was peculiar to watch this, and just like I kept expecting it to be worse at certain points, and then various people would be like, well, you know, there's nothing wrong with it exactly. But I don't think Razor Ramon returns his feelings or something like that. And it's like, well, that's actually a fairly neutral statement, all things considered, you know? Like,
it could be worse. Yeah, no, well, this is the age of literally not that there's anything wrong with that. Like, that was a whole thing in like sitcoms, and like, which, Will and Grace is going to just like
great,
right around
but
the
is actually not as bad as some not of the fucking bad. Shit that's going on now. Like, I would much rather have people be like, well, it ain't for me, but there's nothing wrong with it, I guess, than to say some of the shit that's been
life,
being
yeah.
said, you know, like, yeah, that's still a little rude. It's still a little offensive, but like, I would much rather have that, you know, than like, yeah
exactly.
And I feel like increasingly,
goddamn,
you know, like Matt Walsh couldn't have happened in 1995 is really like my conclusion here. Like, it was too soon for him then.
Oh yeah.
Like,
oh no, it took a lot
these guys
of work
talking
to get us
and they're not
him.
they wouldn't be if Vince McMahon in 1995 heard Matt Walsh, he'd be like, whoa man, this'll fuck our ratings, chill out. Like, what, you know?
I get you buddy,
but you know,
we're trying to make money here, pal. Like, no, that's yeah. Woof.
It was just a weird thing. This match between Yokozuna and Razor Ramon
sucked. Fucking
dick.
Sucked all of them.
Sucks a huge butt, and there's no reason why it sucks, because these two wrestlers can both bring it, and they just like don't.
They just no. I had that in my notes. I was like, these are literally two of my childhood favorites wrestling each other, and it blows. It just fucking blows. But I will say, literally, Razor Ramon in my favorite trunks of his, the yellow with black blades. Like, those are that was my Razor. And like, fucking hell. And you even got
Razor Ramon in a cool outfit. I'll give that.
Drag queen at the side of the stage, watching everyone intensely. Like, everything about this should be great.
Some fun stuff going on around the edges, but it's just not working. And then the post-fight interview. Now, we've talked about how Razor Ramon, they kind of consistently keep failing this character.
Yeah.
There's, like, no way they could have failed him more than the answer he gives in this post-fight interview.
They really
fucked
that shit up.
I would have rather him been fucking homophobic.
No,
I would have rather him fucking said a slur at me.
I was like, exactly. No, just call me. Just use the slur already at that point.
Like, Razor Ramon is literally just like, well, I'm into women. I don't return gold dust affection. And if we meet in the ring, it is what it is, I guess. Like, walks that like and it's like, dude, like the best option here in my opinion would have been for him to be like, well, I know Gold Dust is playing mind games with me, and yeah. Guess what, you need more than mind games to beat Razor Ramon or something, like, you know, like something,
yeah,
like
instead
something
he
like
literally
that.
Walked out and said no homo.
And instead he's just like, yeah, you know, I don't kiss dudes, I guess he does, that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Dude, that's so fucking weak. Like, his character looks like extremely weak. It's been completely fucking emasculated by Goldust, especially because, okay, it'd be one thing if it was just the letter or just one thing, but it was like so many things, even raining gold glitter on him instead of giving him
his usual
intro.
Pyro. That was a good troll. Like, that pleased me right into my veins.
Like, I would have liked to see a stronger reaction from Razor to some of that. And I'm semi-joking about the homophobia, but honestly, if he had gone on a bit of a homophobia, I would have appreciated him just at least having some fucking character in that moment instead of just being like, yeah, dude, no homo, I guess. The letter was kind of weird. I can't really tell. I'm not going to say anything about it because this is a kid's show.
Right. And he could have, but we'll put it this way too. IRL, he's on his way to leaving the company. And one of the big reasons that people like to say, who knows how, I mean, this guy, like we've been talking about, has a million reasons to leave at this point. But apparently he really didn't want his character to be seen as gay on TV because his kids watched the show, was his thing. So he literally didn't want to work with the queer guy, basically. And Dustin's a fucking like redneck cowboy straight dude. But like he just even like he's believing the kayfabe, basically. And it's like, whatever, dude. Okay, like Roddy Piper is going to show up more than happy to do a hate crime, okay? Because we can depend on Roddy Piper. When we need him to come to WrestleMania and do a hate crime, he says, where, buddy? Where can I sign up? You know, like, let's go. But yeah, whatever, boo. And then, like, Vince intros this Say It Ain't So Shawn Michaels package. And for a second, I got jazzed for maybe Weezer, but no. This shit sucked.
This sucks so much.
It was so bad.
And especially, okay, I don't know much, but I know that Shawn Michaels did not retire.
No.
But they just took him out for a little while because he had an injury.
Yeah, it's absolute bullshit. But Vince makes him a little love letter video, like for the one that got away. Fake overlaid fireworks over the drum hits. Like, this was something. This was something else. This video editing is my passion kind of shit.
Yeah, it's garbo. It's annoying. I don't even hardly know what to say because it's like, I just kind of started to tune out the longer it went on. Shawn Michaels is fucking whatever to me. So,
and to
like,
think I used to love him when I was a kid, but that was after this. I feel like if I was a kid and I'd saw this, I'd been like, oh, fuck that guy. Much like Eric Bischoff, 8-year-old me would have just been sitting there like, you can't fight with a concussion, pussy. You know, like, God, it's terrible. Fucking Bischoff. Well, speaking of Bischoff, that's the end of Raw. You really summed it up. What, like, I don't really have much to say about this. It sucked. That was the whole package there.
Again, there's some hints of like the quality creeping upwards.
But it's
Undertaker.
It's got some time to cook.
Gold Dust.
Really, mainly Gold Dust. When I think about that, like that was the most.
Mostly those two things, Gold Dust and Undertaker. Those were the two things where it was like, there's some promise here. Actually... And guess what? Neither of them fucking wrestled in this episode. So let's.
Exactly. Yeah, you are the demographic, Kennedy, that Bischoff was playing to when he said going with where the big boys play. Because like, yeah, at this point they're not wrestling, they're talking about wrestling on Raw. And now we move on to Nitro, where I was not expecting this, folks. It's a historic one. This is the historic Nitro where Pepe dresses up in an extremely offensive sombrero and mask. It's historic. Now you know.
Okay, yeah. That's the historic aspect. I mean, I did notice but again, I was like, what's historic here? Because a lot of interesting things happened in this episode.
Yeah, no, it led to lawsuits. I'm fucking kidding. That is not the history. That was not.
Okay, I don't know what you're gonna have to. You really have to fill me in.
Well,
I don't know.
What the actual history was happened directly after that. We are live in Augusta, Georgia. It is December 18th, 1995. And sickos, our longtime listeners, ye old sickos, if you will, know that we kind of start with the Pepe talk, but then all of a sudden couldn't even deal with it because Alondra Blaze, the WWE current women's champion at the time, literally you saw her on WWE the last time you were here.
I was wondering if this was was the thing. Yep. Yeah.
She comes out, walks onto the stage and grabs a mic. It is that night, Kennedy. Yeah. It is the night that happened.
This is a set of bold declarations.
It is. She comes out and tells Vince to suck an egg, basically, and fucking says, "I'm not Alondra Blaze. I'm Medusa. I've always been Medusa," because that was her name when she was at WCW before. But Vince makes all his talent change their name so that he owns their IP instead of them. That's his fucking game, which is why John Moxley was Dean Ambrose and all that bullshit. Whenever he can get away with that, that's what he does. Sometimes they're already too big and he can't fuck with it. But yeah, he fucked with her. So she's like, "Nah, fuck this. This shit would lead to litigation, Kennedy." Like, which, and it's even wilder. Like, it was so good. She calls Mongo a bad dog. He pretends not to like it. It was great. She was just with the Fed. She
throws the WWE belt in the trash.
And that was huge, because, and that's what led to litigation, because that was the actual belt, right? So oddly enough, Vince literally knew that he could win this suit because he lost this suit earlier in the timeline. Because at one point he got Ric Flair to come over with the WCW championship, and they were calling him the real world champion arc. They had to blur it on TV, and eventually he had to give it back. And WCW won the lawsuit back then against him, saying a belt is intellectual property. So because of that, he got to sue WCW this time, and he fucking took so much money from Ted Turner. Yeah, like, he's like, "All right, fine, like, the tables have turned," and like, this is one of the first like major like drawing blood of the war, you know. She came over and said, "Your shit's fucked," and like, "Go get fucked right in the ear, eat a big one," and like, this is fucking awesome. So like, that's how we start this shit. What the fuck, like, that's a historic night. Mago says, "Sea covers got soaked in Connecticut, I tell you what." And they're like, "Yeah, they know what they're doing."
The only disappointment here is that she doesn't actually wrestle in this episode, which, like...
No, yeah. They like take good care of her.
The missed opportunity to some extent of, like...
Well, it was all a surprise.
Big, you know, but also it was a surprise, and... You know, and, but I think it would have been cool to have do something else with her, maybe in the episode,
other than just that
so
one.
So many
thing.
Matches and so much chaos in this episode, which not a complaint, you know.
Well, no, yeah, but I do think a perfect example of that is right as she's done doing this, as we know now, historic thing. They bring up the fridge, like they bring up the dude from the Bears, and it's like, okay, cool. Why? Like, you just had this amazing thing happen, and they're just like, now a celebrity athlete.
The announcers are dropping the ball in this episode, and I did notice that.
Quite a bit. Outside of Bobby selling the handshake like it was killing him, that was pretty great.
That was Bobby Heenan is the best of the three by far.
Yeah, forever and ever. Amen. Yeah.
And Bobby and that other guy, like when they start acting like they want to kind of maybe fight each other at the end of the episode, that I think if they had done a little bit more of that and a little bit less fucking him and Han about, oh, the WCW is so great. Like, they spent so much time just talking about how great their fucking program is. And it's like, dude, like, talk about anything else, please. Like, you know, like, this is not content.
Yeah, but I think they were really trying to drive home what they had just pulled. But that's the problem, though. It's like, yeah, you did this cool thing, but then you're going to have a boring rest of the show for a little bit because you can't stop talking about it. And on top of that, you're going to get the shit sued out of you. And thus also make it impossible to do it again with Bret Hart in a couple of years. I kind of like it because Bischoff has this smugness throughout this whole episode, but in the long run, he eats shit. Like, this was a bold move, but it's
seen to some extent with these
It's like, yeah, it's like drama. Like they're literally doing drama. It's okay. it was, I will say, absolutely good for Medusa, and like good on Medusa for being like, this sucks where I'm at right now. And I'm seeing like all these other women show up and fight over here. Like, I want to go do that. And she does. Yeah, like, she's going
to
get in.
All it. Respect to that part of it, which seems very shrewd and completely wise. But yeah, no, there's just a lot in this episode that felt like a letdown to some extent.
Yeah, the thing that was not a letdown to me, though, is this opening match. We get the actual real Nature Boy, technically the second, I think, but not Buddy Lindell. And we're finally getting this like weeks-long teased Ric Flair versus Eddie Guerrero match. And I'm just like, all right. Cool, because I didn't know this happened. Let's go.
It's a pretty good match. I like Ric Flair. I like Eddie Guerrero.
They do a lot of walking around each other for the first 2 minutes, you know, playing up to the crowd. It's pretty great. But when it really gets going, like just really gets going. Bobby said, I think you sent it to me, the thing about how many of you humanoids.
Yeah.
And I was like,
there was a really good announcer line that was like, how many of you humanoids have, which humanoids, first of all, this is a really funny thing to call your audience. How many of you humanoids have done something right?
Done something well 11
done
times.
Done something well 11 times, which is like funny as fuck. Like,
I was like, why you gotta call me out like that on a Saturday morning, Bobby?
Oh, outrageously hilarious thing to say.
It's so good. That's why he's the king. Woo. Eddie does his strut mocking Flair, and I feel like we literally watched this match on Raw, but worse. The same thing, but like making fun of the Jeff Jarrett strut. And like Jeff Jarrett also uses the figure four, and I was like, what's going on here? There's too many Ric Flairs on the field right now. Like, and, we're up to three.
A bunch more guys get in the ring and talk shit, and honestly, this part was confusing as fuck. And then another guy comes over and asks Bobby Heenan to be his manager, and Bobby says, no, this was also confusing.
Oh my god, that was... Yeah, I have that. This fucking Colonel Pittman in the saddest. That's like the saddest shit. Like, I can't. All right, we'll get there. I can't. I do want to not go over the end of this match, though, because I think it was a really great fucking match. Eddie does some cool shit where instead of like taking the hit to the balls, he goes outside the ring and when he gets knocked off the top rope, and it's like, all right, cool. He gets him in the figure four, and like, you'll see a lot of times where like, if you're in a figure four and your shoulders go down, the guy will start counting because it counts as a pin, but it's always a two count just to kind of draw it out, and they do that for a little bit, but then he straight up loses that way. And I was like, the first and only time I've seen someone get the three count with a figure four that way, probably. And I just like that. That's worth writing down.
Also, I did like that, like, Ric Flair was just, like, out of control, just pretending to keep hurting Eddie's knee over and over again, even after the match was over.
Precisely.
Like, that was just, like, that's peak theatrics.
It is good shit. That was
being a character that people don't know if they want to cheer for or boo for, which is, like, that's what the Nature Boy is all about, is being this like sort of in my mind anyways, being this sort of like, he's this sort of like hard to predict, hard to control element in a way.
Well, he's the dirtiest player in the game. That's exactly it. He's wily. But anyway,
overall,
let's get that in there. Arn rushes out to talk shit. And like you said, all of a sudden there's just a whole bunch of people in here, and it's like, okay. And then all of a sudden Boston Bob, the Taskmaster, is here, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? He's talking about respecting Arn the Enforcer. He's mad at the youngest horseman, and like, he's fucking with my Dungeon of Gooners. So this is the beginning of Dungeon and Doom and Horseman starting a feud. It's better than Hulk and the Horseman, with, you know, woo, or Hulk and the Dooners. But the horsemen make everything better. So it was certainly confusing, but like, it gets going. But then, yes, Pitbull Pittman shows up. This shit made me so sad. Like, For a couple reasons. First of all, it's the third walk-on so far up to the managers or the commentary, and it's like, what the fuck? Apparently, even in story, Pitbull understands that his shit is stale and he is going to get fired. Because he's just come up like, I'm fucking up. I need a manager, basically. And Bobby's like, I don't know, fuck off, man. I'll talk to some people for you. But I'm like, okay, that's how they're trying to save Pittman. Okay, sure. Cool. That was random. That didn't need to be there, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I felt about that. Like, this is really sad and it doesn't need to be here. Kind of like Pittman. He's just really sad and he doesn't need to be here.
Yeah, it was very weird. Felt strange.
Didn't like it. Didn't like that much. Like it. No one liked that.
No one enjoyed that. That was just a bad time all the way around. So,
And to continue,
I don't know what else there is to say.
I was gonna say to continue with my trend this week, apparently, for transitions. Speaking of other things no one likes, the homunculus of Memphis, Tennessee, Jimmy Hart, comes out with Lex Luger. Woo! And he's fighting American Male, Marcus Alexander Bagwell. And he's still pretty good at this point. Soon he starts sucking forever. This was another just extremely mid match.
Yeah, like, it doesn't overstay its welcome, which helps, but like...
Yeah, nicer than other things this week, for sure.
But very mid match, just two sweaty dudes that are kind of a little hard to remember who's who, even though it should be easy to remember. Lex Luger's got that greasy hair. Should be easier to remember that, and yet somehow again it was like I found myself feeling like who's who in this match occasionally, kind of feeling just like hard to keep track of.
It was whatever. He wins with the rack, and it's like, well, that's how this is always going to go. It was almost a squash that was not quite a squash. Then he does a promo that was just a mistake. It's just word salad. He's just so gassed, out of breath. He's like, I'm so out of breath because I'm so worked up.
Which is funny to say. But also, you just sound like you need to hit an inhaler, dude. Like, I don't know.
Are you worked up or did you just skip on your cardio this week, buddy? Like, what's going on here? He's just gassed. He's like, I just wrestled a match, but I'm pissed and blah, 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 whatever. He said a bunch of shit. But after that break, we get Sting versus beautiful Bobby Eaton. who is now Robert the Earl of Eaton. Beautiful Bobby was a badass at one point, many, many, many years ago.
It seems like they're trying to compete with Triple H here.
Well, it's one of my favorite gimmick slides in wrestling, because Steven Regal came over and he needed a tag team partner. And since he was a pompous British lord who happened to have a Blackpool Street Fighters accent, they're like, fuck it, we can take beautiful Bobby and make him Robert the Earl of Eaton. So we're all supposed to just forget the Midnight Express and there you go.
Wipe that from your memory. Get that out.
Never happened. Don't worry about it. It's amazing how nice he cleaned up, actually. Like, he used to have like a feather mullet and he's like, no, I'm proper. And it's like, dude, who are you?
Now that said, I didn't mind this character. Like, I'm talking a little shit, but I actually didn't, this wasn't like awful.
No, that's what's great is it's beautiful Bobby Eaton. Like, one point he hits Sting on the jaw so fucking hard you could hear it on the camera mic. And it's like, yeah, guys, I'm going to remind you, I'm still Bobby Eaton.
They telegraph a little too much that Sting's going to win, I think.
Well, yeah, it's Sting. As soon as Sting comes out, it's almost guaranteed.
Sting is dope, so.
Exactly. he hit the face of the company in the face of the company. so it's like, oh, buddy. Yeah, but Stinger puts him away, basically, and...
I mean, that's just a consistently solid character in this era. Good look.
Exactly. And the crowd loves him.
Swagger. Crowd loves him.
He's going to get a pop. And like, the music's great. He is a man called Sting after all. But he can't fucking talk on the mic, and that's whatever. He gets a pop over talking shit over Flair, which is always good. But overall, it's just, good gosh golly, Sting sucks at this, you know? Like, he's just, oh, geez, I'm just so miffed. Like, everything he does sounds like, just stop it, bro. You're freaking me out. But yeah.
He's iffy in the promos. He can wrestle, he can talk shit, he can look cool. He can talk shit in a one-liner, is what I was gonna say. Like, yeah, if they just cut to him, like when they cut to him like right before the match, he can give like a quick one-liner, he sounds kind of cool, but then if you let him talk for like a full 30 seconds, you start to be like, man, I don't know.
It starts all falling apart. Yeah.
Like, this guy's a fucking theater kid.
Basically. Who got buff.
He's not anything else. That's what he is. Like, there's two ways to become a professional wrestler. You wrestle and then you learn how to act, or you're a theater dork who gets buff, and Sting just gives theater dork who got buff energy. Like, he's just like, he's just like, he seems too jazzed to fucking be there.
Oh, it's all gonna change. But yeah, like, and he never gets better at talking on the mic, so he eventually just stops talking, and it's when his character is the best. And eventually he does a really good Heath Ledger impression. I'll give him that. Joker Sting is pretty solid stuff.
Sometimes the no talking wrestlers have a lot of fucking presence.
Yeah, the Giant could take some from that, and he kind of does here. Giant shuts up and plays here. Giant does some crazy shit tonight.
Yeah, every time the Giant talks, that's also a huge problem.
That's also a big old problem. Oh, he shut up today because, like, goddamn, like,
they kept his ass quiet today. They were like, Giant, well, just look scary.
Do some crazy shit.
Throw Macho Man around. Which, I mean, that isn't fucking impressive. Like,
yeah, like, that's impressive.
Very few people could pick up and throw Macho Man Randy Savage. That's insane, actually.
Just make Randy Savage look tiny. Like, he just looks tiny by comparison. He looks like Wolverine trying to, like, climb Colossus.
Much like Wolverine, Macho Man, full of shit.
Full shit.
You want to talk about a guy? You want to talk about a guy who can talk to the camera?
Yeah.
Watch, man, Randy Savage will show up and fucking drop just the wildest ass lines you've ever heard.
I got things to say. Yeah.
Bizarre, incredible delivery that's somehow both like perfectly consistent and never consistent.
I think my favorite of all time was a early WWF pay-per-view before this era, where he was like introducing someone, he's talking to someone, and then he's like gets called to the ring to wrestle, and he's like, hold on, I gotta go do the thing. And it was just like, what the fuck, man? For real.
Incredible. Oh my god. Yeah, no, he's got more presence than most of these guys put together. It's amazing whenever they let him talk in this fucking
just
episode.
Let him go. Our biggest boy, Florida man, Randy Savage. Nuts.
Now, I meant to mention earlier in the match, there was a line that I wanted to point out, which is one of the wrestlers says, there's no allegiance with a T, no allegiance in the WCW, and it's very clear that he mispronounces this. And then it's even funnier because later one of the hosts goes, well, it's like you said earlier, there's no allegiance. He says it correctly in the WCW. I'm like, that's not what he said, man.
No, that's a fact checking. You guys said there wasn't going to be fact checking. Come on.
The rules said we weren't going to fact check. Okay.
The rules said. How dare you? Bobby got his hater of the year night line in, though. He says that Hogan parks cars at the arena from 5 to 7 p.m.
That was funny.
That was so good. He was on it today.
But Hulkster, he gets the last laugh. because he interrupts the final match with a steel chair and he hits everybody
like so hard. And he has good reason to, because basically, like, what happens here is I checked the time and I was like, there's no way that the Giant is going to wrestle like a 10-minute match against Randy Savage. Like, how is this? Something's going to get fucky. But after a while, I sort of ate my words, because I was like, all right, they're going at it. It's slow, sure. But then all of a sudden, the giant went for a top rope splash, and the crowd exploded. Because, like Bobby said, Andre the Giant never did that.
The Giant started to seem like this could work here a little bit.
Yeah, right? He's starting to figure it out. But on that note, he goes ahead and he steals Hogan's finish. Like, he hits him with the choke slam, but then he goes for the big leg drop. And like clockwork, Hogan comes flying out with the chair like, oh, hell no, brother. Like, that's my finish.
I understand that WCW is struggling right here in this era because they've got...
Everyone is.
They've got the worst kind of success to have because they've got two lovable heroes and it's impossible to choose between them. So they're doing their best to sort of set Hogan up as more of a heel in this present arc in some ways. So that he can wrestle Macho Man and it doesn't seem too crazy. But also, like, they're giving this talk where they're like, yeah, we're best friends, but we gotta fight for the title. like it's so bizarre. Yeah.
And but like,
you can tell, even though they're both great showmen, they're both struggling a little bit with how to present some of this because they're like, man, this doesn't make any sense. But
well, also though, it's like they're having to talk about this after what happened, where it's like he didn't just break up the match. He starts doing like he fucked these people up with that chair. Like Hulk Hogan fucked people up with the chair shots to heads and stomachs.
Yeah,
like,
and then the Giant kind of tries to come back and Hulk
hits him with the runner,
beats the Giant and his team up some more with the fucking chair. And then Macho Man Randy Savage is like, hey, can I have the chair? And
yeah, can I sign that
chair? Yeah, I guess so. And Macho Man's like, well, this is going to be worth a lot of money as a merchandise souvenir, brother. Thank you. Like, that's what is fuck? What the fuck?
Hulk went Looney Tunes there. And it's like, yeah, dude.
Hulk went Looney Tunes there.
It's like, yeah, dude, the Dungeon of Goon were holding Giant's arms back so he had no protection when a running Hulk Hogan just fucking swung for the fences on his dome. I popped. I was like, this rules. Fuck this. Like, this, all right, this is the Hulk Hogan. Like, I want more of this. And the crowd eats it up. It should have ended there, I feel like, but the promo gets going. I'm like getting pumped and like it's great, and then it just keeps going and I start to lose it a little bit.
they kind of talk a little too long after the match. I think it would have been good to have Macho Man get to give a speech before the match rather than have all the time, so much time be dedicated to after the match, when it kind of felt like it sort of drags on past a certain point, like, okay, yeah,
it just sputters. It's just like, no, we're good.
The show's clearly about to end.
Hit someone with a chair again. I want to go back to that.
Macho Man, like I say, kind of saves a little bit with some of his this incredible showmanship. Hulk Hogan too. He's much more of a bastard, and I don't appreciate him as much either as a person or as a wrestler as I
do.
Oh,
they were all
the Macho Man, but
they were all bastards.
Hulk's a particularly bastard.
But Randy absolutely saved what could have been shitty with the fact that just everything he comes out of his mouth is gold for having come out of his mouth, basically. But that's it. Like, that's the
Hulk
end of the
Hogan
episode.
Went Looney too.
Hogan went Looney too. God damn, kid. Like, don't be scared, kids. He just went Looney Tunes. It's like, okay.
Fucking
well,
amazing.
That's something to be scared of. Yeah, no, the commentators do whatever. They, like you said, they were off tonight. So needless to say, at the end of this, I agree with you abso-fucking-lutely that Nitro won this week for sure.
Nitro big one. From start to finish, lots of excitement. The matches the only don't thing overstay it didn't... their welcome, which helps even with like the slightly slower matches.
Yeah, the only thing it was missing for me was Goldust. You get a drag queen in there, and I'm like all the way set, basically.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, if they had somehow attracted like maybe Sting, Goldust, and the Undertaker, like two out of the three of those even just over to WCW, then like we don't even we're in 2024 going Vince McMahon, you know. Yeah,
careful what you wish for, because at one point bits of that happen and it sucks.
I don't want to spend, you know, we need to wrap this up soon, but I will say
we gotta get out of here.
Vince McMahon, piece of shit, but he has a slightly better understanding for theatrical timing than whoever's running WCW in this era, because
yeah,
a lot, there's just like, it just feels like there's certain promos that run too long. There's other spots where it feels like a promo is missing. Like,
yeah, well, they're getting their shit back together. Like, WCW went through a lot of ups and downs before it landed here. So like, and the fact that they're doing it at all is pretty wild. And like, it doesn't hurt that Ross sucked so much. Just biggins, just bags and bags of big old penises, and not in the fun way, in the particularly not fun way, stinky ones. It's terrible. Yeah, real bad. I don't know about you, my match of the week was Eddie and Flair. I didn't think that I was going to be that simple, but it did everything for me. I don't know if you had a match of the week that
I
was
think I'm
favorite.
Actually going to go with the Macho Man and the Giant.
The Giant? Yeah, no, that was a banger.
There were some incredible moves in that match.
I was not expecting that.
You know, sometimes when they pair these people up, it's like we were talking about with like the Buddy Landell thing. You could just tell he would be getting his ass kicked in real life.
Oh,
but with Macho Man and the Giant, they did a really good job of making it feel like, yeah, the Giant's really big and really strong, and the wrong move could just take Macho Man out. But also, Macho Man isn't going to go down easily, and he might be able to tire the Giant out and win this. Like, they really did a good job of making it feel like either of these guys with their physique and their skills could really realistically conceivably win this.
They made Macho look like a squirrely motherfucker. Like, he's just hanging off the back of the Giant for like 5 minutes. I was like, no, I'm into this. This is great. But yeah, we did it. Fuck yeah. Well, thank you. That was fucking awesome. We made it all the way through. And yes, it industrial solvents straight to my dome, Kennedy. That's basically how I feel after
Raw
some of these
Raw in particular was just
a whole lot of something.
Mind-numbing in a special kind of way. I'm looking forward to coming back on the show when you're in, like, 1997.
Yeah.
And the turntables have fully turned.
And, like, WWE begins the biting back after getting their ass handed to them for 83 weeks. Yeah. That's going to be good stuff. But until then, do you have anything that you want to plug? You mentioned Worst Week Yet, podcast, things of that nature.
It's a show that I'm on. It's a podcast. We talk about the news. We talk about some other stuff. We're working on, I can't really reveal too much because there's an election dependent aspect to what we are going to create next. But Andrew Hillary and I are working on something new. And I know that sounds a little ominous. It's not as ominous as it sounds, but just we've emotionally tied certain decisions to the election. and that's where we're at. So, but check out Worst Week Yet. That show, it's been going for a while. It's pretty good every week. We keep trying to make it better. And like I said, in a few weeks, we may try some experiments that might shake up the show in some really fun ways. Or I don't know. We'll see.
I personally can attest it is fantastic. It is one of my favorite weekly programs.
Thanks for having me, Garrick. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. I've got edit, cut, paste. Thank you for coming. And
I gave
thank you all
mean
for
one
hanging
at least
out.
Once I realized.
Yes. Yes, the folks listening here, nothing happened. We are professionals. There was no editing. It was fine. Magic. But thank you guys for hanging out and listening. You can find us on Blue Sky, of course. We're basically a Blue Sky podcast leaning into it at mnffpod.bsky.social. Instagram, which has been updated. Please clap. At MNFFpod. And if you want to join, you can join the Patreon at patreon.com/MNFFpod for pay-per-views and all kinds of extra goodies. Otherwise, we shall see you next week for more Raw versus Nitro on Monday Night Fake Fights. Okay, bye.